The thing about bipolar disorder is that it's a two-in-one sickness. But when you have an episode, for example, with the mania, we call it a manic episode. So you start to behave recklessly, you become excessively generous, you have grand views. I guess you can feel like, yes, you can feel like you are the queen of the world and everything you say is final. They can also be very talkative, talking a lot. And sometimes even the things they are talking about don't add up. You can also be very hypersexual and maybe have sex a lot without even getting...
Esinam, I remember hearing your story recently when we met and I was really inspired. I just couldn't wait for you to share on this podcast for our audience here as well. I saw an article of the World Health Organization on depression that they had. They had these research on some numbers. I was so alarmed, right? Because the numbers were strange. I'm like, these numbers are even those that maybe have reported at the hospital or various therapies and other things. I saw that, and this research was in 2019. There were about 280 million people that they had seen that they were living with depression, out of which 23 million were adolescents and children. And then they went on to say about 40 million of these people were living with bipolar depression. I was really alarmed. So I just want to know, I know you have, you know, struggled with bipolar for a while now. How did it all begin for you? What are the struggles? And at what point did you know that you had that bipolar depression?
So the thing about bipolar disorder is that it's a two-in-one sickness.
Okay.
Made up of two sides. We have the mania and the depression. Mm-hmm. So when you are mentally healthy, you don't really see the signs and symptoms of the mania and the depression. But when you have an episode, for example, with the mania, we call it a manic episode. So you start to behave recklessly. You become excessively generous. You have grand views. I guess you can feel like, yes, you can feel like you are the queen of the world and everything you say is final. You have racing thoughts. You have very wild ideas. So if somebody has bipolar disorder and they are driving and they are having a manic episode, they could be driving at top speed and not care about anything at all. They can also be very talkative, talking a lot. And sometimes even the things they are talking about don't add up. And they can also come up with plans they want to execute. Some of the plans may not be attainable. But when you are manic, you feel you have the capacity to do all those things. And you have a lot of energy, high energy. Sometimes too, you can also be very hypersexual and maybe have sex a lot without even getting tired. So I always say that bipolar disorder, it manifests in different ways for different people, depending on your depending on your personality. Me, I like to I'm not saying I excessively shop, but it's always nice to go to a shop, a window shop. So when I'm manic like that, I spend all my money on buying things I don't need and all of that. Then after the mania, we swing to the other side, which is the depression.
Okay.
So with depression, there's low energy. Sometimes I'll have too much need for sleep.
Okay.
It's like I prefer to be asleep than being awake, because being awake, I know I have responsibilities to take care of. When I'm depressed, I have suicidal thoughts and suicidal ideations.
Yeah.
I don't want to live anymore. I don't want to engage with people. I withdraw. So when I'm depressed, I don't pay calls. I don't message anyone. It's even difficult for me to even go to church or have my quiet time and believe God. It just feels like a hole. Every day it gets deeper. I lose interest in activities I once enjoyed or are required to do. I don't even have the urge to bath, brush my teeth, comb my hair, eat. It's just, depression is one of the most difficult places you can ever be in.
Yes. That must be a real struggle, right? So very, how did you struggle. End up with this struggle?
So it started in 2015. At the time, I was in my second year at the University of Ghana studying French and linguistics. I was in a relationship that was almost a two-year relationship. It had to come to an end. And I couldn't bear the thoughts that this was what it had come to. And I bore the guilt thinking that if I didn't ask this person to break up with me, I could have still been in the relationship. And so because I kept on going back to this person, begging and begging, and I got the repeated rejections, and I just started becoming sad. I did not know what I was also going through was depression, because my knowledge about mental health was very little.
Okay.
And so all I knew was that I did not want to go to class. I could not do my daily activities. I was I thought, oh, maybe it's just because of the situation that has just occurred. So after some time, I'll snap back to my old self. But things were not changing. It got harder and harder every day. My roommates and friends had to support me, manage me. My parents had no idea this was what I was going through on campus. So by the time I came home for long vacation, that's when my family got to know,
that you were struggling.
So, yes, this is what you are struggling with. And even my mother thought maybe it's a spiritual attack. Me, myself, I also felt that way, because it felt like I was losing my mind. So that's how, after that, I got to realize that things had gotten very bad.
Very bad. But just to take you back, you mentioned that you asked him to break up with you. Or is he the one who broke up with you and you were begging and he didn't want to take you back?
So I had growing up, I've had issues with low self-esteem, inferiority complex. I've had a lot of fears and insecurities. And this was the person that at the time I felt safe with. But because of my fear that he would end up dating someone else who had come into the picture, this person was even a harmless person. This person was just his friend.
His friend.
And I remember I also didn't think much about it. But one time my roommate heard me over the phone talking with him about this his new friend. And my roommate passed a comment like, what if he leaves you and goes in for that person? And I thought about it for about a day. And I thought, oh, listen, protect yourself. Break up with him first so that one day you're not going to break
so
up
you
with
have
him.
The upper
and that's
hand,
when
right?
I went. Yes, yes. I thought the damage would be
let
less.
Let me damn be before
and
you
that's
damn
when
me.
I went to him. Yes. So going to him, telling him I want a breakup.
Okay.
And he accepted it. Now, when I look at it, I feel like if this was real, real love, this person would have asked, oh, why? What's going on? But, but those things were not done. It was like, okay, thank you for breaking up with me. I'm moving on with my life. So that's what happened.
Wow. So what has helped you through this process? Are you taking medicine? Are you in therapy? Like, what has really helped you to be able to, you know, overcome, be yourself?
Okay, so first of all, my faith has played a huge role, because in the Bible, I would ask, like, I could relate to certain characters. Someone like Joseph struggled a lot too.
Okay.
And then in the end, his story was beautiful.
Mm.
So I would encourage myself with the word of God, and I would listen to other people's testimonies. And also the fact that I went through the fire and or saw other people go through the fire and it got better. It gave me a lot of hope and encouragement. And the medications too have played a huge role. Because of my lived experience with bipolar disorder, I take mood stabilizers and antipsychotic medication. And it's a daily thing. I take it in the morning and in the evening. So it helps me. It doesn't take the sickness away. It just manages it. The medications can't cure the mental illness. It just manages it, makes sure that my mood is
stabilized.
Stable.
Okay.
And then the therapy too, I do that. I actually have my psychologist's number. So if there's anything I need to discuss with her, which I'm expressing, I can call and talk to her. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of my mental health journey, my family, we all had to go through family therapy. So it was a group therapy session where my family, my father, my mother, my brother, and I will be in the psychologist's office and things will come up. And the main reason why they asked us to do the family therapy was so that they can know how to support me. And I also how I, as a person with the condition, can learn to live and understand them. So we did a family therapy for some years. And I also had my one-on-one and private therapy sessions with my psychologist. And it has been very helpful because when you are living with this condition, especially at the time, I didn't know many people with the condition. So the psychologist was someone that I could easily talk to and feel understood, seen and heard. Because because if I go and talk to my regular friends, they cannot really give me. Sometimes the counsel is good, but because they do not have professional experience, sometimes it's like they cannot resonate or relate with me.
Or sometimes
they might Sometimes they might even over spiritualize the situation. So those things have been helpful. And also doing daily confessions and affirmations. I have them on my wall. This book, Battlefield of the Mind, also really helped me.
I read
because
that book as well.
Apart from, it's a very,
very good
so
great
apart
book.
From doing, apart from doing the physical things, I was also dealing with my mind because a lot of the negative thoughts, patterns, and life I had developed, they were like strongholds that needed to be uprooted for me to have a better route to recovery.
So positive confessions, the medication, surrounding yourself with good people who can understand, going to therapy, and even your family having therapy has been fundamental. That's great. And would you, from 2015 till now, when you started being on the medication and, you know, positive conversion and all that, would you say you are really getting better? Are there days that you feel like you are relapsing? Or are there particular things that triggers, you know, you to feel or be hyper or be, you know, depressed? Maybe today you are happy, tomorrow you are not. Are there certain triggers that you've analyzed over the period to see that that's what puts you back to relapsing?
Okay, so for triggers and stresses, it's like they evolve over time. So at the early part of my mental health journey, anger was a trigger for me. So if I get angry a lot, it just triggers an episode and then I relapse. But over the years, anger doesn't really trigger an episode like that. And also, when you take the medication for a long time like that, as a human being, you are growing, you are evolving. So sometimes the medication may not work the way it used to work. So you have to go back to the hospital for them to adjust the dosage. Otherwise, you might relapse. So there was a time like this that I was taking my medication faithfully. But I realized the more I took the medication, the more depressed I was becoming. So I had to go for a review. And the doctor adjusted the dosage. And within a week, I bounced back. So yes, there are triggers. There are also stresses, and also there are also things that when I look at myself, I have just decided to be very intentional about certain things. Like I prioritize my sleep. I really prioritize my sleep because insomnia is a very big trigger for me. If I'm not having good quality sleep, or making time to sleep and sleep well, it can trigger an episode. I need to make sure that even my bed, I lay it well, sleep well, because I just want to have a very good night's sleep. I don't overdo certain things. I don't try to copy certain people's lifestyle. Like if someone is out partying late into the night, it doesn't mean that I get to do the same thing. I choose what works for me. So for me, when I look at my road to recovery, I feel like I'm doing much better as compared to the beginning.
That's good.
Because in my first year, I was in deep denial about my diagnosis. I did not like it. It felt like a death sentence. Mm. So for that year, 2015 to 2016, I wasn't taking my medications faithfully. So I was always relapsing. I wasn't adhering to medical advice.
Mm.
And I would, my condition was getting worse. I was offending people close to me. It was affecting my academic work. It was affecting me as a person, how I, like my life. I wasn't happy with my life. I wasn't enjoying life like the way I'm happy and I enjoy life right now. And also, it's been a few years. I haven't relapsed in some years now. I think my last relapse was in 2021. That was the last time I was admitted at the psychiatric ward at Kolebu. I had that year I was getting depressed a lot, and the final one was a manic episode, which I was having. It was as if I was hallucinating.
Okay.
I was seeing and hearing things that were not there, voices and all of that. So that was the last time I was admitted, and I told myself I don't want to come back here and sleep. the world is great and everything, but I love my freedom.
I
want to be like every regular person. I don't want my life to be confined to a ward so I think I'm doing well. Still on the medications. I have to take them every day, and I go for my review appointments every 3 months. First, when I began my road to recovery, I was going every week.
Okay.
Then it became every 2 weeks.
And it
then
it became every month. That's good.
Yes. Now it's every 3 months.
Yeah. And you said something that's very important, right? Being intentional and deliberate about it and living in denial. Yes. That brings me to my next question, because I feel like a lot of people, right, may be, when they notice certain symptoms or they are even told, they will decide not to adhere to where they will be living in denial, like you said, right? And that may end up being worse. It may give them worse or put them in a worse position than if they had paid attention to it, right? So what's your advice for women, particularly who are struggling with bipolar, and how can they find support and help to be able to, you know, overcome this situation?
So first of all, I feel like when you have more knowledge about mental health, it's less likely for you to be in denial. Because the reason why I was in denial was because I didn't have a lot of knowledge about mental health. Yes. And I just
thought mental health issues were just for maybe in quotes mad people, right?
Yes, on the street.
Got it.
So if I've been given that diagnosis, that means very soon I'll be on the street. So I didn't want that. And I didn't even know there were successful and famous people around the world who were living with mental health conditions and are still working very hard
and thriving.
Blessing the world. Yes, and thriving. So because that's how come I think that everybody should just equip themselves, learn more about mental health. It's just easy. You can just Google or watch videos on YouTube. Just like keep adding to your knowledge about mental health.
Okay.
It will really help you and make you see there's hope and there's light at the end of the tunnel. And another thing too is that you should also make sure that you surround yourself with people who would not bring your spirits down.
Okay.
I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, and there's this thing. There was a time in my mental journey where people came to me and asked me, Abba, you are a Christian? Jesus died for our healing and all of that. Why are you taking the medicine? And even Jesus healed the madman of Gadara.
Yeah.
Why are you believing the doctors and all of that? I don't understand why my story is like this. And I know that healing takes time. Even me, when I'm taking my medication, I pray on it and I ask for healing.
Yeah.
So mine is taking some time. You just have to understand that everybody's journey is individual. So if you have been diagnosed, just just take it that, oh, this is what it has come to me. Okay. And my healing will come through acceptance, not accepting that, oh, this is my final sentence, but accepting that, oh, there's an issue here.
Yeah.
We are going to put everything together, physically, spiritually, everything, combining all our forces to make sure that I get better and I'll be fine.
Yeah.
It will take some time. Also, you can seek professional help.
For example,
when your car is spoilt, you don't take it to the baker, you take it to the mechanic.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
That's spot yes. on.
There's no shame in seeking professional help.
Mm.
Some people are afraid of the label that if I'm seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist, that means I hate to use the word, but it's just, they'll say, that means I'm mad.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that, because you go and see a dentist for your teeth. You go and see a cardiologist for your heart.
Yeah.
You don't have a problem with that one. So why is it that when you are seeing someone for issues with relation to your brain and your mental health, there's a problem there.
That's profound.
And I understand them too, because of the stigma, but now you do not need to go to places labeled mental hospital. Now, almost every hospital has psychologists and psychiatrists. Okay. And even online, there are resources, there are apps. I've seen so many apps coming out that I think BetterHelp is one of them.
Okay.
Yes, you can go online. They can even connect you to available therapists. You can pay for therapy sessions and all of that. So now we have so many resources available. So nobody really has an excuse to say, I did not go and see someone because there was nothing available.
That's true. And I like that you talk about, you know, not being ashamed, right? And
yes.
Like sometimes too, I feel it's not people's fault. Like you said rightly,
yes.
The stigma, people pointing hands at you, people trying to like not invite you into their space because they're afraid that in the next minute you're going to lose it and then maybe hurt them or something, right? And that brings me, as we wrap the curtains down,
yes.
I just want
yes.
to know, what are some of the most important things that people who do not live or who are not struggling with bipolar depression should know about this condition so that they can become better allies for those who do have? Because if I don't understand, like I always say, you cannot give what you don't have, right? And like you said, initially your knowledge about mental health was limited, and that's the thing. And
yes.
So if I'm having the condition and somebody is around me, the person doesn't even understand, right? The person will not be a better ally to me. And that's what I was saying. People would just be afraid of you. So what are some of the most important things people should know to be able to be better allies for people who do have bipolar?
Okay, so firstly, I want everybody to understand that the World Health Organization estimates that 1 in 4 people will experience a mental health condition in their lifetime.
Mm.
So if it happened to me when I was 21 and you were my ally back then, it doesn't mean that maybe when you are 35, it cannot happen to you.
That's true.
So being an ally, you should prepare for yourself or for someone around you. So
fair.
Preparation just means that you should just learn more, read more about mental health. It will help you to be able to easily see signs and symptoms, not to diagnose the person, but you can easily tell when something is
wrong with someone.
Because you are close to the person, you can even tell from the language they use. Like if someone tells you, oh, I want to die. Sometimes people brush it off, but when it becomes very persistent, and you can actually see, oh, this was good. The person is having suicidal thoughts. And you can easily encourage the person to seek professional help. And also, when someone tells you that their diagnosis, that, oh, I have lived experience with bipolar disorder, please do not always use that to call them out
call
on
them
everything.
Out, yeah.
So a friend of mine told me that sometimes when she's at home and maybe she laughs too much or does something, you say, hey, the sickness is coming. which I think is very stigmatizing. Yeah. It's like the person knows they already have a diagnosis they are dealing with. They just want to forget about it and just be human first. Just be human, go about their life, enjoy life, not to be reminded constantly about their diagnosis. When you can make someone feel seen and heard, not making everything about their mental health condition, it's one of the best gifts you can give to someone. So don't always make everything about their condition, asking, I'm not saying you shouldn't ask those questions, but when it becomes too frequent, have you taken your medication? it's as if you are enjoying. Yes. And you are enjoying being their supporter and ally. It's like you are so happy they are in this situation. And finally, I think that people want to be better allies. I think you should create a safe space for friends or family members to always find that safe space in you. Because if I tell you about, let's say, what I did when I was manic or I was depressed, and I tell you and you go and tell other people and it's going on and on and on, you don't expect me to trust you the next time. Yeah. So let's try and be very confidential. And also just not always, you know, sometimes people are always quick to advise. They don't take their time to listen. So sometimes just being a listening ear. Sometimes people just want to rant and just like offload some of the weight they feel. Don't always be quick to advice. Maybe the advice can even come at a later time. Maybe the person told you this week, maybe your advice can come next week. But when you want to be quick to advise all the time and making it look like, so something happens when people are depressed, sometimes people tag them as lazy, thinking that, oh, they are intentionally behaving. They don't want to work. And sometimes people expect that if you have a mental health condition, you can easily snap back and be mentally healthy. You have to understand that it's a chronic condition. The people who are in that situation are not enjoying it one bit. So just be very empathetic, very patient, very loving, very caring, and understanding that this is not the person's final destination. They will come out of the tunnel. They'll be fine. You can be very hopeful like that for them, it's very attractive. It's very like magnetic. They can also draw from you that hope and light and inspiration. But when you are the one being very discouraging, very offensive, you pull the person down. Had told me, one day, so now you'll be fine. And I told the person, no, I don't see myself being fine. It can never happen. But now I look back and I am like, wow, if I pass through this fire and now I'm here, anybody can pass through that fire. So these are the things I would like to tell people and encourage them and them with. And also make sure that don't ever forget that it could happen to anyone. It doesn't, like, it's no respecter of persons. Doesn't matter your age, your gender, your sexual orientation. It can happen to anybody at all. And we have different triggers and stresses. We also have our thresholds. So what may affect you, Lady Grace, may not affect me. And we all have different capacities.
That's true.
Maybe you went through something rough. I went through something not rough, but I developed a mental health condition. You shouldn't go around saying, you cry, your own is sleeping small.
My situation? Why are you crying over this small thing, right?
Yes. You should not do that because we were created differently. And we all had different backgrounds, different upbringings. So let's keep in mind those things let's just be very loving.
Yeah, those are very, very important admonishments, right? And for all those who are listening to us, just like Esinam rightly shared, let's be mindful. Let's learn more about mental health. Let's be deliberate and intentional about mental health. If for some reason you see any indicator, anything that's, you know, is making you mentally unstable, there's nothing to be shy about. Seek for help at the right time. Seek for help. Go to the hospital. There are so many resources that you can have available, right? And for those of you who don't have this condition or any mental health condition, also be knowledgeable. And if you see somebody struggling with it, just like Esinam was sharing, be empathetic. Try and put yourself in their shoes. Create a safe space so that they will feel the sense of hope that they will get better. They will be able to pull through. Esinam, I really, really appreciate your time. Thanks for being vulnerable to share. In our generation, it's so difficult to get people, right, opening up and sharing that this is what I went through, this is what I faced. And that's why I've created this platform, right, to be able to get people who will be vulnerable enough to share their journey, to talk about their stories, so that it can encourage another person who may be going through similar, if not same, situation as well. I really appreciate all the wise nuggets you have shared. We wish you the very best. And for anyone, Esinam, like I said from the beginning, is the host and convener of Mental Health Courses. It's a page on YouTube. Please do well to follow her. She shares amazing things on various mental health, postpartum, a lot of mental health topics. She's an advocate for it. So please do well to follow her channel. Thank you, Esinam. I hope to see you in person sometime very soon, and enjoy Ghana's weather. I will enjoy my freezing here as well. Thank you all for staying and tagging along. If you are yet to subscribe to this channel, please do so. We have wonderful and amazing things to share with you. Until we meet same time on another episode, please do well to stay safe and take care of your mental health. It's bye for now.